You're listening to Recovery, Healing, Outreach, and Awareness, a podcast about domestic violence, sponsored by Randy's House of Angels. Today, we're talking about building safe, structured environments that help children comfortably share their thoughts and emotions. When kids lack the words to describe what they are feeling, creative outlets can be a lifeline. By incorporating games and art therapy, children gain a safe space for expression. This is especially effective for younger children, as recognizing nonverbal cues helps them identify, understand, and finally label those big emotions. We'll also explore how therapeutic groups tailor activities to fit a child's age and developmental stage. These group settings play a critical role in showing children they are not alone in their experiences. Ultimately, we want to look at the long-term impact. How does resilience building strengthen confidence, communication, and a sense of security over time? Joining us today is Ann Garris. Anne is a seasoned counselor with almost two decades of experience as a school counselor and educational leader. She currently delivers the Randy's House of Angels curriculum designed to break the cycle of domestic violence to boys in 5th through 8th grades at the Nativity School in Harrisburg. 2 years ago, Anne was credentialed as a court-appointed special advocate and works with a family of 6 children to help navigate the foster care system. Certified in safe crisis management for over 10 years, Anne was also a seasoned trainer for the Family Support Alliance and taught the program recognizing and reporting child abuse to school educators. Her extensive qualifications include certifications in student assistance program, trauma-informed educational practices, mental health, first aid, and more. Anne has a master's degree in counseling from Penn State and also holds a principal certification from Shippensburg University. The facilitator of today's podcast is Dr. Ellen Smith. Ellen Smith, MD, retired after 30 years of teaching and practicing family medicine in the Harrisburg area. Her undergraduate studies were at Hollins University, and she completed her medical degree at the Penn State University College of Medicine in Hershey, PA. In addition, she completed a family medicine residency at Lancaster General Hospital. Since retiring, she has studied adversity, how a traumatized brain works, and how to bounce back and become more resilient. She is passionate and appreciative of the opportunity to educate thousands of people about these topics. She also volunteers at the Trinity Preschool of Harrisburg, a grant-funded, inner-city, trauma-informed preschool. Finally, she has developed a tool called the Personal Resilience Planner, which takes the above concepts and provides a practical way to look at strengths, trauma responses, resilience, and how to progress in these areas over time. Dr. Smith welcomes opportunities to discuss her work.
Good morning, Anne. Anne Garris, we're so glad you're here again to talk to us. Child-centered approaches for children exposed to domestic violence and trauma in the household, such an important topic, as you know. And I would just say, let's start really right out of the gate. Let's talk about creating safety in a somewhat or very unsafe environment of a home.
Well, thank you for having me back. I appreciate it. I always want to talk to you guys about how we can keep our young youth safe in their brains and their bodies. And when we're talking about this child-centered approach, what we're trying to say to you is that the children that have been exposed to domestic violence, we're not just talking about a kid who saw something bad happen. We're talking about a child whose whole sense of safety and predictability is completely disrupted. So their exposure, they're just not witnessing a conflict or a one-time happening. They're experiencing trauma that shapes their brains, it shapes their emotions, and it shapes how their relationships develop with anyone else they come encounter with. So we want to start to talk about that experiencing and how we can actually not say, hey, shift the question from what's wrong with this child because we see certain acting out behaviors to more what has this child experienced and how can we help them feel safe again? And the key component to the program of any kind of therapeutic approach or anything to help children support children is safety. And I don't mean safety like no one's hitting you. I'm talking about that they have understood that they're allowed to have a boundary. And that safety is their definite, their support. With that, you create a predictable environment. And how do you do that? You can do this in the morning routine of your home. You can do this in the morning routine of your classroom, the morning routine of your family. You start the same way. It's always a greeting. It's always an eye contact. And it's always a waiting to hear something back, whether it even be a grunt. It could be a sigh. But you do have to, the adult has to take that pause and wait for anything to come back. And then acknowledge whatever that comeback was, not sarcastically, just another acknowledgement of, I'm glad you're here, or we're present. And then move on. We're not asking for anything more. And safety is where they can say, I can be here, I can belong, and I can express myself in ways that people will actually allow me to be myself. And the words that I choose. But the great thing is that predictability is the routine. We have found that when you have those routines, it builds trust with adults. It lowers that cortisol levels and allows the brain to shift from survival mode to actually learning mode. So they're not constantly working with the amygdala being hijacked and their brains taking over. They're actually being able to relax a little and process what's going on around them. So when we do it with Randy's House of Angels program, we begin the same way, checking in slowly. How are you? Where are you today? How are you today? And then we start to go to, what kind of rules do you need in this environment to feel safe? They all come up with different ones, depending on which age we're working with and what group I have. Some of them are to the point of, we don't touch. And I was like, okay, so that's a rule right there. Somebody might say, we don't use nicknames. Okay, so the safety is, if I hear nicknames, I have to step in as the adult. Now, that's a boundary that I will say to them. I will protect that boundary for you because you told me that's important to you. And so when you have an adult in this environment, they have to be attuned to what the child has just said, what they need for safety. And if the attuned adult can say, I can do that, I can hold that line for you, then the child begins to trust. And they begin to believe that in this environment, I can start to maybe talk about my trauma in a way that no one's going to judge me. And so the person that's facilitating the conversation or the program has to be very attuned to saying, okay, I know that that's important to you, and I'm going to help you with that. So sometimes we just have to stop what we're doing and have to say, whoa, you're the one that came up with that rule of we're not talking while another person's talking. I didn't come up with that rule. How do you want me to get involved? You said it was important to you. Should I stop everything and we redirect? I don't want to embarrass you. I don't want to shame you. But you said that was important. And they might say, well, it's important, but not when we're just playing a game. And I'm like, okay, there's a boundary that I didn't know you had. So games, we're playing Uno, you can interrupt. Okay, I got it. And then you can see them turn their head to the side and pause and be like, whoa, that person listened to me. And I was allowed to say yes or no to that safety issue. Because when I'm in my home and I have violence, I don't have that control. It's very unpredictable. I don't know if I'm causing it, someone else is causing it, a noise is causing it. So I can't create a boundary that says, whoa, stop right there. But here you're allowing me to do that. You're giving me that privilege. Yes, to me it's not a privilege, it's your right.
Yeah.
And we do have a wonderful program in eighth grade where they do have to write their what they think is their right, their Bill of Rights.
Wow.
So it's interesting on that one.
And it's really exciting for me to hear that the students or the young people have an opportunity to speak about the rules, because I think typically the adults always make the rules and don't always keep the rules. But for you to have a conversation about, you know, what's important to you, for instance, no nicknames, or what's important to you, no touch. That's an unusual concept in general. And so to have that conversation, and you mentioned that parents can use this information to have these conversations. And the other thing I heard was that sometimes the young people change their minds or give some more nuance. So you can't interrupt, but if you're playing Uno, you gotta interrupt.
Especially someone stacking.
That's right. And potentially, you know, if the student or young person changes their mind and says, yeah, that was the boundary that I said, but as I ponder on it, we need to change it. And you've implied that they can change it.
And we start that every, that's how we start every time. Do you have anything else we need to add or take away? because we're starting a new day, a new session. Do we need something else to be put in there? And a lot of times they start to reflect, especially the younger ones, the values that have been given to them by the adults in their world. So they say respect. And I'll say, I don't know what that looks like for you. Respect might be something different to me than something different to you. So what would that be? Mm-hmm. And then they start to really get into it. They start to say eye contact. And I'll say, okay, good, eye contact is healthy. But then I had a student that was trying to show me that he was making eye contact so he wouldn't blink. And he just kept tracking me with his eyes wide open. And I had to stop and I'd say, okay, again, for eye contact. Polite eye contact, you look at the person and acknowledge them. You look away, you look down. You holding eye contact is intimidation.
Right.
But he was trying so hard. He was in fifth grade.
Yes.
And he just really wanted to show that he was being respectful.
Right.
So when they do actually do the behavior, you do want to thank them for it, but you don't want to embarrass them. So sometimes if they're calling out to me and I'm writing something, so I have my back to them, they'll say, Miss Ann, I'll say, my ears are on you, my eyes are not. Go ahead. And then when they give me the information, I turn around and I look at them and I'll say, okay, now this is what I heard you say, but again, my back was to you. So it's the adult asking for clarification and not just assuming that what they just heard was what the child is actually trying to indicate.
Mm-hmm.
Trauma doesn't affect doesn't affect the language part of the brain. It affects more with the picture part of the brain. So a lot of times the students don't have the words.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to kind of respect that the words they're using might be just a word that they heard a parent say,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
they don't actually know what it means, like respect.
Of course, that makes sense. So much there. I want to move towards creativity and play, and I think it's funny that you said the rules are a little different with, for example, Uno, but that's an area that you pay attention to and you work with the young people about. So can you comment on that?
Well, children communicate with play. Okay, that's how they navigate the world. The trauma is stored, again, like I said, in the nonverbal part of the brain. So play allows them to have an expression that does not require language, but it also allows them to have like a symbolic process of kind of rehearsing a behavior. So maybe even a behavior that's not acceptable at home, they might rehearse it with you to see what the reaction is. So that's why you still have to have that same, you have to be attuned to what's going on, because they're always going to, as they should, push the envelope and try to figure out where your boundaries are. And that's their job. So you as the adult have to know clearly what actually bothers you and then be aware of that, because they're going to figure it out very quickly. But when you have art, you can reduce the symptoms of trauma because they can increase emotional regularization, because what they're doing is they're expressing, they're telling you their story. And what's wonderful about this is that the adult in the room has to understand they cannot demand the story from the child. They cannot demand that this child talk to them, because that is not their language. We as the adult have to respect that their language, they tell us through play all the time. And an instance of this is sometimes with the younger group of Randy's House of Angels, we play a game of what we call silent ball. And we're in a circle. No one can talk unless you're holding a ball. And you talk, but you can't throw it until you say the person's name that's going to be receiving the ball. So nobody can say, throw it here, it's my turn. None of that. What we're getting is self-control, right? In a safe environment. They're not going to get in trouble. I'm just going to remind them, ooh, you're out now. You're out. And they're like, oh, I talked. You talked. You can't talk. And so it's a wonderful way in play to practice self-control, where their brain is not going to take over because they feel like they're threatened. It's just a game of ball. But what I quickly learn is who will cheat. Who will try to get the other person out by not throwing it correctly? Who will call themselves out because they don't want to play, because they're intimidated by the other kids that are throwing it? So quickly, I can gather information on who thinks that they are the most important person in the room and who in this room doesn't think they have a voice in a matter of minutes of playing silent ball. And parents can do that all the time. You know, you can't talk either. I can't talk unless I'm holding the ball. So if I want to argue with the way somebody threw the ball, we either have to call a timeout, which is what we agree on, or I have to get a ball. Now, secretly, sometimes I hold an extra ball just in case, but they all know that I do that. It's not cheating. I do it officially. I say it officially because sometimes I have to intervene very quickly before something escalates. But that's play, you know, or if a child has figurines and they keep knocking the figurines over, they're telling you something, that something is happening where this is what they think they're witnessing. is their, it's the way they see this. So if you can eventually get them to have those figurines, build a circle and protect what's ever in the middle of the circle, that's where you see progress. That's no language. That's just me moving a figurine around with permission. You know, can I put this figurine? Can my figurine join your figurine? Can I get into the kinetic sand with you? Can I do this with you? Can I play in the water pan with you? And, you know, they're like, no. And I'm like, okay, we're not ready yet. So that just, but what a great boundary, right? How much power that child has to say, I'm in the water pan right now. And it usually takes a minute, and then they say, "Nah, come on in. Play in the shaving cream with me." You know, but it's all very tactile learning. Like if you take, like play again. I really enjoy it, obviously. If you take shaving cream and you put it into a sandwich bag, and you put two drops of color on one side and two drops of color on the other side, you see these vibrant colors. And this is how we talk about emotions. This is one emotion. But when we seal the bag and we start to mix it, it gets very cloudy. It's not a bright emotion anymore. So going on to the next thing about creating safety after play is getting them to talk about words with their emotions. They don't have the language. So what you're going to see if you don't have the language is you're going to see a behavior. And you might not like that behavior. And you might label it a certain way. But the child doesn't know that. So now they think they're being told that they're an angry child. Mm-hmm. Or they're a despondent child. Or they're a shy child. But that's a label that an adult put on them by observing their behaviors. But the behavior that was showing was because I had an emotion. And when I see violence, I don't know that there's an emotion behind that. I just see behavior. So you have to get them to connect in your brain, hey, that emotion is coming from somewhere and it has an action to it. Mm-hmm. And so when you start talking about labeling, if you name it, you can't shame it, is usually what the funny thing that we say mm-hmm. to them. Because if you call it what you think it is, then that's what I believe it is. But what does that look like on your body?
Right. And if you name it, you can't shame it. Or I've also heard if you name it, you can tame it. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's my emotions and your emotions may look the same behaviorally, but they may not be the same emotion. It might be anger or guilt or any other numbers of things. And so you're naming that. One of the things I heard in what you just said is you're teaching these young people that no is no. And that's what it means. And not every young person, probably very few young people, consistently get that their no is no and that their voice means something and it matters and how they work and how you did the play, how you do the play to help accent that. And your conversation made me think back to all the dodgeball games that were so rough as a child.
Randy's House of Angels holds two major fundraising events throughout the year that support all programs, including Randy's Race, a 5K run walk for Hope and Courage, and a Round for Randy golf outing. All proceeds from the events support direct services provided and allow all programs to be provided at no cost to parents and guardians. First, let's look at the annual Round for Randy golf outing, hosted by Randy's House of Angels. The event will take place on Friday, September 11th, 2026 at Rich Valley Golf Course. Registration begins at 7:15 with a shotgun start at 8 a.m. Please reach out to randyshouseofangels@gmail.com for more information.
Let's talk a little bit about, we talked about emotions, we talked about safety, about coping skills or relaxation skills. We have the emotions and everything. How do you work with these young people and parents and teachers about, okay, let's move, not push them, but give them the opportunity to learn to better become safe, stay safe, manage their emotions, and again, not telling them as much as like opening opportunities?
Well, you know, as a school counselor and as a court-appointed special advocate, I have learned that you don't push kids to talk about that trauma. And you don't push on them that this is a skill that will help you cope with it. I don't know that for you. But I do know that if you can get control over what's going on with your body, you are going to 100% feel like you can control other things in your life. So let's start with the one thing we have, your body. So what does it feel like when you have anger, joy? where is it? How do you know you're feeling that way? And with the younger kids, it's easier to do metaphors, puppets, storytelling, because then it's one off of them, right? It's not direct. That's not me directly that we're talking about. And so it gives them safety. That's their good boundary. It's a safe area. And then every once in a while, they'll say, hey, I do that. And you're like, oh, that's great. You're very familiar with this feeling. And you're like, great, good connection. And that says, again, that's progress. Mm-hmm. If, you know, if a child can stop and say, I remember doing that. You know, I had a fifth grader that said, we were talking about getting hijacked by your amygdala because people already know what bothers you. So they purposely click that pen until you're so annoyed that you either throw something at them or you try to snag the pen out of their hand. And now you're the one that's getting in trouble. And they already know that about you. So every time they see you, they're going to click the pen. You can't control that. What can you do so that you know your amygdala goes, wait a minute, slow down. I have a picture in my brain of me getting in trouble when I take the pen away. Prefrontal cortex, take control. Give me something here of a coping thing I can do with my own body. I can't tell that person no because they're not going to listen to me. I can't tell the teacher because they're going to tell me that I told on them. So what can my body do? And so we talk about grounding. A lot of the students like to take their finger or pointer and go around their thumb and then go up their finger and then go down the next finger and up the finger next. I'm not a fan of that because it tickles, but some children love to do that. It's a grounding. What is really good, and parents can do this, grandparents can do this, babysitters can do this. When that you see the child not coping effectively with what's going on around them, instead of saying breathe or calm down, ask them, tell me three things you hear right now. Three things, because they're going to have to stop. And then just, what three things do you see? And again, they're going to have to stop. All the body is going to have to hit pause. And that's what you're trying to teach them. Everyone has a pause button. And then maybe three things that you feel. You feel your feet on the ground. You feel wind in your hair. You feel like you're about ready to explode. Great. But we don't have to explode. Take those moments to actually think about what you're seeing, you're hearing. Use those five senses, because the five senses are the ones that are feeding all the messages to the brain. And they don't understand that that's what's where this is coming from. They just think it's the brain is coming in. No, it's all coming through your senses. And then you get to choose which ones you're going to pay attention to. You hear the clicking of the sound of the pen. Okay, it's very annoying. Well, can we then focus on what it feels like to sit in that chair? Where's the weight in the chair? Where are your hands in that weight? Okay, maybe you do want to breathe. Can you hear yourself breathing? Do you like that sound? And so now we're totally not talking about a pen, and we're not talking about another student. We're talking about just you and you getting control over yourself. And this fifth grader that had this problem with the clicking pen, he came in the next week and he was like, Miss Ann, he tried to hijack my amygdala. And I said, oh, please, honey, what did you do? And he said, I started to chew gum because I couldn't hear it over my gum. And I'm like, wait a minute, is that gum okay? And he's like, yes, it was okay. I'm like, okay, good. And he said, so I started to concentrate on the taste of the gum, the pulling on my teeth, and the moving it around in my mouth. And then when he couldn't bother me, he went to somebody else. The power that person, that child had, and then to remember it and want to tell me, oh my goodness, yes, that's amazing. I can't do anything better than that. You just did it yourself. You know, now you've got it. You can do that no matter where you are, standing in line, waiting for someone, when you're having something happen at home that's really frightening and scary. Where can you safely go and ground yourself? Not listening to the screaming, maybe. Maybe listening to something else, your heartbeat. You know, or maybe pick your nails and you're listening to yourself pick your nails. Something else that gives them that just it's powerful control. For their own being. And again, that's where the brain kicks in and keeps you safe.
Yeah. So you talked again about choices, that these young people have choices and that you're giving them choices, whether it be boundaries or the seeing and the hearing, and also doing the strategies of, okay, feel your feet on the ground or the movement of your thumb with your fingers. And I chuckled when you said, that tickles me, I don't like it. And so you just set that aside, but for some folks that's helpful, or sitting in your chair and feeling the chair support you. And I'm sure there's any number of things. And I'm also guessing that sometimes the students and the young people give an idea that works for some people and not others.
Do you know what the idea that the boys appreciate? Muscle tensing. Because you cannot see me scrunch my toes. So you don't know that I'm scrunching my toes because you're annoying me. So I can scrunch my toes. I don't have to clench my fist, which is what you would see. Or I can tighten my thigh. Or I can tighten my calf. That's the one that the majority of them, it appeals to. Because they're not giving themselves away.
Ah.
So you wouldn't have a clue that they were getting annoyed, upset, irritated, not paying attention to the learning. So that's the one that they frequently go to, in my experience.
Wow.
Because they can't see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. And is there some groups, obviously you're building a safe enough environment, and then the students and the young people are using other people's group ideas and potentially helping with boundaries as a group. Can you talk a little bit about that?
The group is more than the attuned adult. The group is what compels the younger person to say, this is not about me. Oh my goodness, you've also had this experience. I remember first going into the school that I worked with, and the word violence was not equated to what I was thinking was violence. And I had to go to their definition. And once I accepted their definition, they were like, that is violence. And they were then sharing more. We would talk about people who have someone who's incarcerated. And at one point, they were just kind of like shifty eyes, looking at each other back and forth. And I said, well, I'm going to raise my hand if I had somebody that's, you know. And amazing what they would share. And they would look at each other and said, I didn't know. I said, I've been sitting by you for 3 years. I didn't know that your father was where your father is, or your uncle. And it brought to it not a normalcy like that should be happening in your home. It's just that it was saying it is happening in my home. Mm-hmm. And I don't have to hide it. A lot of times family members don't want you to talk about it. And so they were very cautious with their sharing. But when we start sharing and they can see that I don't take it anywhere. I don't go to a teacher. It stays right there. And it's amazing to me that they respect each other at that time, that they don't take it back to the classroom. That's, again, very powerful on their part. It has nothing to do with me being there 24/7.
Right.
They have decided on their own that in this group, we have a sharing mm-hmm. of things that we've seen in our home, in our community, in our neighborhoods. And it's if I talk about it, it's real. But if it's real, it also means it's something maybe I can choose to avoid. If we don't talk about it, then it just chases me.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe it's not real, but it is. So if you can acknowledge it, then you can then say, I know how to avoid it, or I know how to help my friends avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
So the conversations that come out of this when they find out each other's past stories is amazing. The group is what does the building of social relationships, but it also builds a trust in a group of people that maybe you would not have encountered or been willing to trust.
Right.
Because they're not on your football team, or they're not on your street. So you're making a connection to someone that you only see maybe in school, and you're like, wait a minute, we have that in common. That's something I can learn from you then.
Right.
And I'm willing to listen. So it brings that, it reduces that stigma.
Right.
Of something that might have happened in their home, or why somebody had to leave from the home, or why you're living with your grandparents. I don't have to pretend anymore as to why I'm living with my grandparents because of this has happened with my family.
Right.
You're like, okay, that's your reality. That's good.
Right.
Yeah, I'm glad your grandparents are there for you.
Yeah. It is reality, and you can't change reality. I mean, you can influence it, but what I'm thinking is, like, this is secrets. These are secrets. A parent is incarcerated, or I'm living with my grandparents because, and I think we've all heard, you're only as sick as your secrets, but they feel safe enough to talk about those secrets, and then they get the commonality of, oh, and then you learn from each other. And you can take the learning, or you can say, okay, I heard something from you. I respect you for it. It's not my answer or my way of being.
But interesting enough, when you hear the word secrets, it's an action, right? You actively keep that secret.
Mm-hmm.
That takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of brain power to remember what you're not supposed to be telling and what you are supposed to be telling.
Mm-hmm.
If we can take that stigma away, the brain opens up for learning.
Right.
And so they can concentrate not on survival, but on existing and looking and where I want to be, where do I want to go? How do I want to handle my life?
Right. How do I want to, now I can dream.
I can dream.
I can dream about what I want, and then I can implement. I know mm-hmm. that in the past you've talked about you can't implement get to a dream without implementing a plan. And typically at that age, they need help with going from A to B to C, but as you give them that support, they blossom.
And that's why with a program that for the younger kids is different than the program that's for the teenagers, right? We do a lot more discussion with the teenagers. It's still active learning. We're still physically doing activities. But the wonderful thing with the teenagers, we were doing boundaries. And I said, you know, my boundary is when you get insulted, I'm going to step in. I don't care if you turn your back to me. I don't care if you slouch in your chair, whatever message you're giving to me, but not when you insult somebody in the classroom. And we had to go through it, and we had to talk about it. And the next time around, the child tried it again. And I stood up and just stood between the child and the other students with my back to the child that was doing the teasing. And the other students started to say, hey, look, you represent us. You're embarrassing us with the words that you're using, how you're sitting in that chair. I did nothing except give them a sense of, hey, this is where she said it stops. And it was, and I didn't tell them to do that. They did it, but they physically saw me standing there. So there was a boundary, right? Mm-hmm. And they physically knew that that's Miss Ann's boundary. We don't call each other those kinds of things. And the kid sat up, fixed his tongue. He fixed himself. I mean, and never did it again after all the sessions.
Wow.
And that had not, was not me except for me saying, here, this is our boundary. Hey kids, you know what? You don't need us to fix you. We just need to understand them and give them better options.
Right.
They're not broken.
Right.
They don't need fixing. They just need us to understand what they're talking about in their play.
Right.
And then provide that safety.
Right. Anything that we haven't talked about that you want to mention or that we've talked about that you want to just really remind us about, potentially maybe something you want to let parents know? Because I think parents are sometimes challenged to figure out what's the some right choices.
Well, what I found is that if you do it early enough, we're not just helping them in that moment. We are actually going to change where they end up being. And by that, I just mean just, it's not, label the emotion, not the behavior. That doesn't become who the child is. And create a safe place where they can say, this is my boundary. I can't take any more from here.
Mm-hmm.
And respect that and show them how you do it. Then that's a good way of a lesson, is demonstrating.
Excellent.
With keeping the emotions under control.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Anne. Mm-hmm. It's been such fun and so much education and things to take from here. I appreciate it.
Yes, just keep them in your mind. They're playing.
Absolutely. So are we. We need to do a little more of that.
We do too.
Yes. All right.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Randy's House of Angels is sponsoring season 4 of a series of podcasts that will serve as a resource to anyone impacted by domestic violence, including parents, guardians, caseworkers, health providers, advocates, teachers, trauma specialists, and clinicians. To provide an overview of domestic violence and how to handle situations where domestic violence is present. Season 4 will include a series of 5 podcasts that will include an overview of the life that children have after leaving a domestic violence home, how children cope with the trauma they've experienced, the hidden face of domestic violence for male victims, child-centered therapeutic approaches to children exposed to domestic violence, how to create a safe environment to help children deal with their emotions, and court-ordered trauma for children. The podcast will include testimony and stories from experts who work in the domestic violence field, criminal justice, juvenile justice, and social work academia. The podcast will be broadcasted starting in August of 2026 and running through October of 2026. Remember, you can always go to Randy's House of Angels website at randyshouseofangels.org if you miss a podcast or would like to find the resources that support the podcast. We also encourage you to click on the link and take our short survey. Your feedback is essential to shaping and informing future episodes of our show.